No kidding. It's true. Having had to catch a plane and fly away, we missed kiddin' time in California's Great Central Valley. Our loss leads us to ask, have you had the opportunity to play with the kids?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Welcome to the 1412th edition of the Food Chain Radio Podcast. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Now, hey, perhaps you're among our friends who are over there in Lisbon who are tuning in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome to this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, it is transition time in California's Great Central Valley. The days grow longer, the sunshine is getting warmer, and the great blanket of tule fog is slowly lifting higher. Soon, the almond trees will burst into blossom, the bees will buzz into a frenzy, and farmers will return to the soil to plant about $34 billion worth of crops, give or take. The return of spring to California's Central Valley may just be one of the greatest shows on earth. Probably the best place to watch the valley spring into action is near the little town of Clovis at the Rocky Oaks Goat Farm Creamery, where Valentine's Day is transformed into Kiddentime Day. That very special event, at that very special time, leads us to ask, have you had the opportunity to play with the kids? Now, if you have, then you just might be able to imagine the fun at Kiddentime Day at Royal Oaks Goat Creamery. Well, here to lead us through the story of Kiddentime and goats and goat dairy and starting a goat farm and selling goat cheese, we have Margie Weber, who is co-owner of Rocky Oaks Goat Creamery, with her husband Joel, who's hiding out in the background, I suspect. Margie, welcome.
Well, thank you. So we had Kiddentime this past Saturday, and it was very well attended. I don't know who had more fun, the people attending or my staff, because we dressed the kids up, who are about a month old, with little bow tie. Boys had bow ties, girls had little heart-shaped scarves. Then people arrived, and we had a special area that people could come and play with the goats, take pictures, and enjoy just petting baby goats and being out at the creamery. It helped that the day was a lovely day. We had scads of rain before, but it dried out, and it was sunny. It was great, and people had a wonderful time here at the farm.
Now, where do all those people come from? Because you're kind of out there on the sticks, aren't you?
Well, we're not really all that far out. We are close to Fresno. So most of our people came from Fresno, and then there were some that came from Visalia. Most of people come from within our area. We have a pretty... Fresno's growing a lot, and there's a lot of people that are wanting farm experiences and come out to visit our creamery.
It's hot. Most people probably don't realize, but Fresno County is probably the most productive agriculture county in America. Is that still true?
Yes.
Even though
it makes it nice for us to be in an ag center too, with all of our kids and selling our kids, because a lot of them go out to become grazers, or people can have their home farms and want goats to milk. And so they'll buy our goats so that they can have their own goat milk.
Mm-hmm. So you set up Kiddentime then as a way of telling the world, and especially those near your community, that you have something very special going on, and that people can actually experience that.
Yes, it's one of the rare few times that people can come and actually be with the baby goats, because we have supervised visits and things like that. And we open our farm up that people can come out and enjoy the kids, because goat kids are really cute.
Well, I've had the opportunity, having been raised on a farm, to actually experience baby goats, which are called kids, of course. And when the baby goats are born, it's kidding time. And so I've actually had that wonderful experience. Tell the audience a little bit about what makes goat kids so fun, especially for city kids.
Our kids are very, because we bottle feed them, they're very tame and they love their bottles. And so they'll run up to people thinking it's bottle time. And so they like that. And kids are very spontaneous, that they'll just hop and leap around the area, and they start acting like big goats, real little. So it's kind of just funny watching little miniature goats acting up. And then they just have an energy and a happiness to them. And they like to talk and they complain. And they like to chew on everything. They do eat hair.
So when the kids and the city kids actually visit, these goats are very, very sociable with the children.
Yes, they are. And sometimes the kids are a little overwhelmed by that because they go, oh, they bit my fingers. But they put their fingers in their mouth. And the kids will suck on fingers because they think it's their bottle.
There you go.
So sometimes it's a little bit, it's a lot for kids.
And do you allow the city kids to feed the goat kids via bottle?
The kids are on a, the goats are on, they like schedules. Mm-hmm. And so usually they're fed before they come. They want to feed them, and kids will, I mean, baby goats will eat whenever they're fed, but they don't need to be fed. So we usually don't do that.
Okay. But there's enough activity in the kids so the city kids can have quite a show for themselves.
Oh, yeah. They can interacting with them and just like holding them and touching them and things like that is a lot.
Now, what reaction do you see from the parents who are bringing their children to a farm?
A lot of times the moms want to come out and just leave the kids at home because they want to enjoy themselves and have a good time. And so they're like, this is fun. And they're very enthusiastic. And a lot of times it's a good time to educate parents too about like goat care, dairying, and things like that too. So everybody learns when they come out.
And goat dairy is a very special thing too, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course,
it's similar. It's similar to a cow dairy that we milk, and we're milking just once a day. You can milk twice a day, depending upon how much production you want to get, like a dairy. And we milk every day, 7 days a week, which people are like, dairy is like, yes. Mm-hmm. So it's a year-round operation.
Good. And as we move along, so now you have a bunch of kids. But you don't want to have a bunch of kids all the time. So as you wean the kids, what then with the kids?
So because we've been around now for a longer time, most of this first round of kids are sold. I only keep two or three for my replacements. And then the others get sold, like I said earlier, that some of the goats are sold now for that people want to show. So they'll be picking them. They've already selected their goats. And so people reserve them, and then we feed them until they're old enough to go, and usually about 2 months. Then some people, like actually at Kidding Time, some people came, and they're like, oh, these goats are cute. We've been thinking about getting goats. And so some people actually purchased goats that day. So they get sold for grazing, usually for breeding, and some for pets.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering what city people do with goats, because I once took a goat home and parked it in my mother's backyard where she happened to have roses. And I got to tell you, I've never seen my mother so mad in my life as when I parked a goat in her backyard with the roses.
Yeah, no, we don't, if people are going to buy goats, like I say, we're lucky because we are in a rural area. So we have a lot of people around us who have land who want grass control and things like that. So that's what they'll buy the goats for. If someone's like, oh, I'd love a goat, but I live in town, it's like, no, probably better not. Because in Fresno, sometimes you can have chickens and sometimes you can't. So there's no way a goat's going to be in town.
Right.
And by the way, roses are one of their favorite foods.
I know that. One of those life lessons that you learn the hard way. But my mother eventually forgave me, probably 10 years
later,
But they were a lot of fun. Goats are just fun. And so in a few minutes left, you weren't raised with goats. You were raised with cows, correct?
Yes. We were raised on a cow dairy down in Southern California outside of Chino, which used to be a dairy capital back in the 50s and 60s. Now it's all sold and gone residential.
Right.
My parents moved up to and sold their dairy and bought almonds up in Merced and then sold those and went into commercial real estate eventually.
Okay.
But good. Yes. So I have a dairy background understanding, like supplies and milk and things like that. But the cow size is totally different from a goat.
Good. Well, that's what we want to learn today is the difference between cow and goat dairy and the nutritional values of both of them as well. But what about Joel? Did he come from a dairy farm as well?
Joel was raised in town. He's actually a minister's son.
Oh, okay.
And was a pharmacist by education and worked in pharmacy and drug distribution for years. And then is now working back in the hospital system in finance department doing pharmacy contracts.
It always helps to have a city job when you're farming small, right?
Yes. It's great for supplemental income.
Good. Now, who talked who into the goat dairy? Did you talk Joel into it or did Joel talk you into it?
It was my dream and Joel supports it.
Okay.
And supported it.
Good. So there was something about being in the dairy business that you grew up in that you missed and you wanted to find again, correct?
I miss being in agriculture and working with animals and things like that and being outside.
And being outside very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it is getting close to spring as we speak, 1 week past Kittentine Day almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so has the tule fog lifted? Have the almonds gone into blossom? Have the bees started buzzing?
The blossom trail should be open soon, which is all of the fruit trees. The stone fruits are coming up, are just beginning to bloom. Of course, we had a heavy rain, which typically happens with the first bloom, so part of the blooms get knocked off. And it's been beautiful. We have more rain coming, but hopefully we're past the fog season.
Okay, which is a good time of year to be past the tule fog season. Ladies and gentlemen,
yes.
Michael Olson here with the Food Chain Radio Program. We're talking with Margie Weber, who is the co-owner of Rocky Oaks Goat Creamery in Clovis, California. And today we're talking about goat dairy, and we especially want to learn about the difference between cow dairy and goat dairy, because goat dairy, I think, is something that people are becoming more and more interested in as we go along. So we're going to take a quick break. I want you all to stay tuned. This is The Food Chain, as I said. Michael Olson, Margie Weber, and we're talking Kittentine and goats. So do stay tuned.
let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I happened to miss Kidentine this year and California's Great Central Valley. But in just imagining how much fun it must have been, I just think, oh, darn, maybe next year. So, Margie Weber, how many kids do you have on Rocky Oaks Goat Creamery?
Currently, we have 43. So what we've had our goats, we have spaced out the kidding. So we had some in December, then we had some in January. I have another group that will kid in March, and then another group that'll kid in May. And the whole purpose of that is to get a year-round supply of milk so that we can make cheese.
So you can keep cheese going all year round. So a lot of timing goes into the effort then. Good. And now, when you decided to, you're both were not in the farm, you had to start the farm. So you had to find a place to start a farm, or were you living on a place that could be turned into a farm?
We live on 20 acres. It's like low foothill type stuff, or just introduction to the foothills of the Sierra. It's a beautiful setting, and we're on 20 acres, but because it's a planned community with CCNRs and things, you can have livestock, but you couldn't have a business on there. So that's when we went shopping for land, and we looked at lots of different places because the land had to be ag exempt, so it could only have agriculture on it. So we had to have special land for that, which we found the 20 acres that we're currently on. But then it was interesting because it was old cattle land and it had CCNRs on it that said no goats, no pigs.
So who put those conditions on the title?
It was part of this. There was 14 parcels in the area that we're in, and it was under another PUD type of thing of 20 acres that when they divided the land, that's the conditions they put into it.
So then
we had to do some legal action so that it could all get reverted back to county regulations, which would allow us to have a goat dairy.
What are the other regulations? What are the other regulations that you mentioned?
That were on the land originally?
Yeah, the CCR, I think you call them, or something.
It was like you couldn't have mobile homes. You couldn't divide the land into smaller parcels unless it was, you could allow it to be divided once, which we didn't care about division. We just wanted to make sure that we could have the goats on it.
There you go. But you had to fight for that right.
Well, we had to send out, there was a legal process that we went through.
Good.
So we went through all that so that we'd be legal.
That's something that people really have to think about as they're shopping for property, perhaps to start a farm like you did, is that there might be conditions on the use of the land that might preclude you doing that.
Well, correct.
For example, you know that it's illegal to grow food in your front yard in all but 3 states of the Union?
just for your personal use?
Yes. Amazing.
Oh.
I mean, there are old rules. I'm sure a lot of people like myself break them, but they're there. Those rules are there. So, and if you're going to engage in a commercial activity like a farm, you have to really watch out for those things. So you found 20 acres that replaced your kind of suburban 20 acres. And now you're out in farm country.
No, actually, we still have our other 20 acres.
Ah.
So basically what it is, it actually works really well to have 2 20-acre parcels. We're 15 minutes apart because at home we keep our bucks and we have our retired does over there and then our replacements. So whatever our goats, like, so here are just our working gals, and at home is where our more of the hobby goats, or if we call goats, they go home.
Well, with that being a perfect segue to life on the Goat Creamery farm, what is the social makeup of a goat dairy such as you have there? You have two different parcels for two good reasons, right?
Mm-hmm. Our social life is that we spend a lot of time with goats and with our other staff and things like that sort of thing. So it's a 7-day-a-week operation. Like I said, and even at home, you have to always feed morning and night. Same thing here at the creamery. So we usually have staff that will help out the creamery more. Joel takes care of most of the animals at home. And then me helping as need be. So that's kind of our big commitment of our time is just animal care.
Sure. And what about the animals? How do you work the animals? You said you have the bucks in one place and the does in the other for an obvious reason, right? So you're managing reproduction.
Mm-hmm. So that's part of our herd management program is that we're a closed herd, meaning we only use our bucks for breeding our gals, and they're all registered, so we know who's the father, who is from who. So then I arrange that whenever I figure out their breeding and what bucks to bring over, then we bring over a certain buck to breed a certain group. And usually when we're doing our breeding, like for our January, we use two different bucks to breed. Mm-hmm. So then if people want to buy goats and start to have their own breeders, they can get a doe from one and a buck from the other. Okay. So we keep it all, I plan it out a year ahead. Then my niece helps transport the goats back and forth.
Good. So you must have a computer to keep track of all of the variables there.
No.
No? Okay.
It's we're old school. Okay. So pen and paper work, excellent at finance, things like that.
Good.
And it's just all written down and you kind of figure each year. And then you just keep your past record so you know what you have done. But I really don't have much time to sit and do computer work because a lot of our work's hands-on time.
So you're busy keeping care of goats, and there you go, hands-on.
I'm making cheese.
Describe kidding time for the folks who have not experienced anything like that. Okay, we're talking about does and bucks. Boys and girls.
Okay. Yep. So goats are typically seasonal breeders, which means they don't usually come into season until the fall or like when days get longer. So usually we breed our first group around the first part of August to kid in January. If you want to do it sooner than that, then there's hormones that you can use to cycle them. Mm-hmm. Our particular goats do okay cycling because they're more variable in their temper. The Nubians are more likely to have more success cycling them. But typically we breed them in, we bring over our bucks, two bucks in August to breed our first group. And then they breed goats cycle every 3 weeks. So you have the bucks here for a couple of cycles and they should have bred the ladies. We take them home and then we continue milking those gals until they're about 3 months pregnant. Then we dry them out. We stop milking so that they can put more of their energy into the pregnancy. And then we start the waiting game. Whenever it's about time, we figure about 5 months is whenever the expected kidding date is. So then I go on goat watch, which means I come and stay over at the creamery and check on the goats every couple hours if someone's looking close or something like that. And goats are very classic whenever they're going to give birth because their udders will fill up, then their back tail softens. So that's like the ligaments getting softer, things like that. And typically they might have some yellowish discharge. And then that's when you know that kids are coming soon.
So that's when you really start paying attention.
But then you're on high alert. And usually, sometimes they can have kids without assistance. Sometimes, because there's so many in there and they're all pushing at once, you'll get different presentations. Or if it's been a failed pregnancy, if you had a kid that didn't make it, it's who's the first out, then the goat doesn't dilate quite as well. And goats dilate from the inside out. And so that's, they need that pushing so that they'll open up so that the kids can come out.
So you have to help sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's always part of calving and kidding, I guess. Mm-hmm. Try it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you don't want to lose the kids, but you don't want to lose the mother either. So you want to make sure everybody's safe.
And then it doesn't take long for them to stand up, for the kids to stand up and start bopping around, does it?
They say you like good, healthy kids will be up within like 5 minutes and stuff like that. Sometimes it's a little bit slower. If it's been a more difficult birth, it'll take them a little bit longer. And then we will usually milk the doe and get some colostrum and make sure that the kids have the colostrum, dry them off to keep, and then keep them warm. So that's another big thing with you worry about kids. If they get cold, then they don't do very well. So you want to keep everybody warm. We have a kitting barn now that will have like heat lamps up and stuff like that, that stays a lot warmer. It's a lot easier from, and then keep them off of the floor because it's a concrete floor, which can be cold. So we have pads that we have down on there and then straw. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a whole kind of bunch of stuff to do.
It's an operation, isn't it?
Yes. And it's rather stressful. So it's fun to whenever they come out and it's exciting, but it's also a lot of concern.
Mm-hmm. Good. And does Joel participate in all the fun?
Not if you can help it.
Okay. But you do have help. And I notice you have a local community college that you can get help from as well, correct?
Actually, the does trust us. Trust me especially. And so usually, and I've learned how to handle a lot of this stuff alone because they're, you know, I raised them as kids, so they know you're there to help them. And so there's a trust between them, so it's not too bad. And you're under a timeline too with the kids. I have a vet that's taught me a lot. And then my nursing background helps with the whole kid and medicine thing, care of animals too. But we have some of my employees are from Reedley, and usually they have livestock backgrounds. So that helps out too.
You still have strong 4-H programs in the area, correct? Did you hear?
Yes. Yeah, we have 4-H, and they will usually buy some of the goats to show and things like that.
So you have that relationship, good. And what about the operation of milking? How does that go? You don't do that by hand, do you?
We're on a bucket system. So what we do is we milk into to buckets that are maybe 3 gallons each. And so we're rotating them out because the goats will give anywhere from a half gallon to a gallon of milk. And we milk 6 in a what we call the string, like a cow dairy. And so they fill up one bucket, we take it, and then we filter it and then put it into individual cans that are 2.5 gallons as we store in a refrigerator until we make cheese.
Okay, good. You don't milk them by hand, do you?
No, we're on a bucket system.
Okay, good. I still remember how, I think, but it's been a while. Good. And then the cheese making process. Quickly, how does that work?
We use just our milk, and the cheese is no more than 3 days. Our milk is no more than 3 days old whenever we're making the cheese. I have a special gal, Lucy, is my cheese maker, who's very fastidious and works out great for cheese making. We make 10 different cheese, and then plus a yogurt. So, and on Mondays we plan out what we're going to make. We're making a lot of our fresh cheeses now because we still have some of the aged, and the aged we'll start making when we have more surplus milk.
Okay, good. And fresh milk means that you have to have fresh customers.
We have lots of customers.
Yes.
So usually the vineyard farmers market, we sell just at farmers market. Our product is such that it's not really, there's wholesale to restaurants, but to like a retail chain or something like that, we're not big enough to do that. And we don't have the cost point or the store, the length of shelf life, which they want desire for their products.
Right. So retail has its own logistics that have to be satisfied by the farmer too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't quite fit into those logistical requirements, you don't quite fit into the grocery store.
No. Yeah.
Well, good.
Because we don't have the quantity that they would need to like to meet their needs.
Right. And quality, quantity, uniformity, all of those things really do fit in to the thing. Well,
mm-hmm.
All my life I've heard about the virtues of goat dairy, and I'm so happy to have you here today to fill us in on the difference between cow dairy and goat dairy. And as a farmer nurse, is that what I understand? You probably have an mm-hmm. idea about the nutritional differences as well. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Margie Weber, who is the co-owner of Rocky Oaks Goat Creamery in Clovis, California. Today we're talking about goat dairy. We're talking about kids and goats. And now we're going to talk about the benefits of that wonderful goat dairy. So do stay tuned.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Polyface Farms, Joel Salatin.
Few how-to books could be more appropriate for our times than MetroFarm, a truly comprehensive manual. MetroFarm makes the whole embedded food system doable. It's a must-read.
USDA Director Bud Kerr.
Big book. MetroFarm describes the agronomic, economic, and managerial concepts required to generate substantial profits from agricultural locales near metropolitan areas.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
Duke the Pug will soon turn 20, which is pretty good for a dog breed that averages 11 years. When Duke was 13, he lost a lot of hair, had a hard time getting up for a walk, and his bowel movements were not very moving. We started making his food instead of buying it. We cook up a big batch of rice, chicken, broccoli, carrots, and turmeric, freeze meal-sized batches, and thaw them at mealtime. We also sprinkle Arthrodex on each meal. Arthrodex is a complete blend of plant-derived minerals, vitamins, amino acids, and enzymes formulated to make old dogs young again. And it does. Duke the Pug does have his problems, but he has all his hair, loves daily walks, and has no problems with his movements. Breakfast is at 7, and if it's not there by 7:01, we all hear about it. Make your old dog young again. Pick up Arthrodex at NutriensToGo.com. And while you're at it, make yourself young again with a Healthy Body Start Pack. NutriensToGo.com. NutriensToGo.com.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place in Bremerton, Washington, August 1944.
Bremerton was the best liberty port of the war, and I had a secret weapon for enjoying every second of it. Roller skates. No kidding. Now, right outside the gates of the base was a sailor bar, and almost every sailor would stop right there, but not me. I kept right on going till I get to the roller rink. Most of the guys thought I was nuts, but I wasn't. You see, there was no better way to meet girls than to skate around in a rink in your dress blues. Back in those days, I was limber enough to do tricks like wrapping one leg around my neck while I was skating on the other. Yeah, most of the guys thought I was crazy. They'd see me leaving the base with my skates and just shake their heads, but heck, I laughed all the way to the bank.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it.
on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I recently happened to be shopping at a farmer's market and was able to purchase some of Rocky Oaks Goat Creamery Dairy cheese at two different kinds. Both are very delicious, very distinctive. And I watched as your customers came by. And what amazed me is that your customers appeared to know exactly what they wanted. And do you teach people when they come up like me who don't really know the difference? And why goat dairy? Yeah, let's start with that. Why goat dairy cheese?
The easiest explanation I tell people about the difference between goat milk and cow milk is that cow milk is made for a calf that weighs about 35 pounds, and goat milk is made for a kid that weighs 5 to 7 pounds. So the goat milk particle is just a better size for human bodies because goats are usually about 150 pounds like people. So it's just easier for people to digest. Some of our best customers actually are people who are lactose intolerant and can't do cow dairy, but do goat dairy.
So when people are having trouble with cow dairy, then an alternative to consider then is goat dairy. And why not?
And a lot of the Hispanic population, a lot of babies who can't tolerate formula and stuff are on goat milk. So it's kind of a natural substitute. Because, like I say, it's the particle size that's more natural to humans.
Are there any other nutritional benefits or differences that stand out?
I say the milk is naturally homogenized, so there's more fat in it typically than what cow milk is. You can do some separation of it and things, which is another step. The fat content varies according to the goat and cow. Breed of cow versus breed of goat type of thing too. So it's pretty much the same, but it's just more easily digested and broken down.
That's very interesting because fats are coming back into vogue, as it were, as an important constituent of a healthy diet. We need good fats because our brains are made out of fats and our body needs good fats. And it would seem then that if goat dairy, goat milk, is naturally homogenized, one would get a better source of good fats from the milk.
It's easier to breaking down, so the cholesterol is supposedly be better for your cholesterol levels and things like that. There's a lot of people that tote the benefits of goat milk. And some people say drinking raw milk helps for allergies and things like that sort of thing. So basically, it's just easier for your body to digest, which is going to be better for you all around.
Okay. Now, the other big conflict in the world of milk is that some milk is raw and some is not, of course. And there's been a lot of contention against raw milk in the world. But having been raised on it myself, I never saw anything wrong with it, as long as the dairy's good. What about your goat milk? Is that raw milk then?
No. I too was raised on raw milk, and I have a positive TB skin test because one of our cows had bovine TB. So it's just a way to controlling disease control. But the other thing that's nice for cheese making, ours is all pasteurized. It gives you ground zero to start when you add bacteria in. So it's going to make for a more consistent product. If you are you have your barn milk and you just bring it in and start making cheese, you're adding more bacteria. You really don't know what you're bringing in. So it's more of a quality control thing too, to do pasteurized. That's a liability.
I, for one, was always amazed at the amount of bacteria we carried around on my grandparents' farm with our buckets of milk as we passed through the barnyard and out into the barnyard. There's 100 trillion bacteria per square inch. It just
correct.
And you just put it in the separator, and there you had your milk, and that was that. and nobody ever seemed to get sick. So been my experience with raw milk. Now, as to the cheese, I noticed that your customers at the farmers market were very seemed to be very smart about their dairy, and they knew exactly what they wanted. Our goat dairy, goat cheese customers, typically those who have been through something and have sought out goat dairy to fix that something.
Not necessarily. It's kind of a different balance of people. So the customers, I think in general, they're at farmers markets are more consumer smart on product and more product aware. They're more label readers and things like that, and want to know more about their products, and they want to know the farmer. And I think that's the typical farmer's market person. My customers are knowledgeable about why cheese is because they're curious, and so well, tell them a background story and things like that. And then they've done tasting of cheese. One customer is I like her a lot because she's like she likes the our two breeds. One's Weebs and one's Patience. And she'll say, "Let me taste each of them so I can see how they are this week," which is an artisan thing in cheese because they do vary each week because of the milk and the different things like that, the different environmental factors in cheese making. So sometimes she'll say, "Okay, well, Weebs is better this week. I'll take that one." Or sometimes she'll say, "Heck, oh, they're both good. I'll take both of them."
So
So it just
somebody who's
varies.
really tuned in to taste then, because what we're talking about is a living food.
I mean, all the dairy is actually probiotic because it all still has living bacteria in it. So that's why the cheese is actually a natural one. Our yogurt does have the probiotic in it too.
And probiotics are very important for why? What purpose?
And your gut health for your GI balance. We have to have lots of bacteria to get all of our balance in our guts.
Good. So we're feeding the buggies in our bellies then.
Yep. And that's how
All
you keep healthy.
trillion of them. Good. Well, that's a relatively recent positioned by the world of nutrition that we actually need to feed those bugs in our belly, and the way to do it was with living food, and that's exactly what you're working with. How many different cheeses do you have?
We have 10 different ones that we make. The first one that I made, my husband was like, "When's it going to look like cheese?" Is the Princess Pride, which is the soft spreadable, which is a cream cheese, which is basically like a chèvre. So that's our first cheese. Then we have a crumble that's a Princess Crumble, which is was a happy mistake that Lucy had some bacteria, some culture that didn't dissolve, and so then she went to stir it, which disrupted the coagulation of it, so it came out kind of grainy. So she's like, "That's really good on tacos and things like that." So then we purposely
Ooh, that
started
sounds
stirring
good.
it. It's real good. It's, so she started we started stirring it, so now it disrupts the coagulation, so it crumbles more. So just add a little bit of salt to it, so it's very tasty. Then we make a feta. Our feta is different because we don't soak it in brine. We dry salt it. My personal feeling is that a lot of cheese is too salted and you don't taste the cheese. We have great milk, so I want it to show, so we do light salt. Then we make Heiress, which is another fresh cheese. That's the old hoop style farmer style, which is very good. I call it the conversion cheese because people say they don't like goat cheese and they'll taste that one. They're like, "Oh, this is really good." It's like, of course. So then they'll become customers through that's the gateway cheese. So they'll become customers through that cheese. Then they'd venture on and try different ones.
So if you're going to start with somebody really naive in cheeses, that would be, let's try this one and then move on
That would
to.
be. Because it's very mild and clean tasting. Then for our aged cheeses, we have a Gouda, which most people know. My dad was Dutch, and so we make a Gouda in his honor and aged in red wax. Then we make a Manchego because my mom was Spanish, and soaked in red wine. And then we make Rocky, which is just kind of a different style. It's Joel's favorite. It's an Ermsen style, which is kind of a stinky cheese type of thing. It's a moisture cheese. It's very high maintenance, but it has a great flavor to it, nice aftertaste. And then we make our two Brie's.
Good. So a spectrum of cheeses then.
So when I was planning out the cheeses to make, it was kind of like, what would you put on a cheese platter? So we have a fresh cheese, a ripened cheese, and an aged cheese.
Good. Now, I would suspect that you don't have a lot of competition at farmers markets for your products.
We're unique in that we are only goat, and we don't do any combined cheeses and things like that. There's other creameries around and smaller. Some of them don't have the presence at market that we have. So we are we're unique, but we're not the only show in town.
Right. But you are a full-on artisanal, what I would consider an artisanal creamery, because you have a spectrum of cheeses growing very specifically that would almost have its own appellation were it a wine.
Yes. It is, and we're farmstead, and that we only use our milk too.
Right.
And so that's another real key, so that we can control things more easily, because we don't let them. We know what they've eaten and what, you know. We don't let them graze, because then they'll eat onions and stuff like that, which will flavor the milk.
Tin can. We don't. You know it. They'll eat roses. Yeah, they'll eat everything.
The roses are good. They get to eat some kale sometimes from market. But if depending upon what you're feeding them, it will affect your milk. And so we know what it's what our goats are eating, so we know what our milk's going to taste like.
So that really does make it an artisanal product, because you're actually controlling everything from the get-go to the outcome.
Yeah.
Good. Now, how would you go about introducing somebody to goat cheese? What would you tell them? As the reason to give it a taste and bring it into your life?
That's a tough one, because with it being goat cheese, some people have an aversion to it just because of the name. So usually if someone says, oh no, I don't want to taste it, I usually ask them, are you feeling brave today? And they're like, yeah, I think so. I said, because, you know, ours is kind of different, da 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 da. And they're like, oh, okay. And so that's when I give them the heiress to taste, and they're like, oh yeah, this is okay. But it's usually, because a lot of, if people have a mindset, you're not going to change their mind by, oh, this is actually better for you. They don't care. Mm-hmm. They don't like it.
Now, you sell directly at farmers market, so is it possible for you to sell mail order?
Yeah, we can ship. We can ship. It's a little bit complicated because we ship on ice, so cost does get to be a factor. Right. We ship overnight so that it doesn't waste. We did one shipment actually to Arizona, which didn't get there until Monday when it left on a Tuesday. So we just reshipped that one. But yeah, mail order is possible.
It's possible. So. And to do that, how would somebody in Arkansas get to taste your cheese if they wanted to?
Arkansas would be tough, because we use GLS, which goes overnight, and it's mostly the western states.
Oh, okay.
So they might be able to try more of the aged cheeses. Oh, I wouldn't recommend, because they don't require as much ice and shipping, and they could probably do a flat rate UPS. Mailbox.
Okay.
Mail service type.
Well, that's something for people to consider in Arkansas is to, well, maybe forget about the fresh until you visit California Central Valley, and then you can try the fresh there. But the aged cheeses are available everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the direct from people to farmers is becoming increasingly possible and also increasingly familiar as we go forward, because my family gets food from all over the country from people, farmers we know. And that's something Have you considered opening up that market in a more deliberate sort of way, going after the world?
Not currently, at our current production level, because it's the whole shipping and.
You probably have to get 100 more acres or something, right?
We shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I like the being, directly involved in the whole process. And my fear is if you grow too big, you lose control and then you're going to lose quality.
And you lose the artisan. You become an industrial process. Mm-hmm. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. Mm-hmm. This has been, to me, a very interesting show because I love the idea of the kids, playing with the kids and watching them grow up and watching their farmers turn it in, their milk into wonderful cheese. Margie Weber, co-owner of Rocky Goats Goat Creamery, Clovis, California. Give them a try. Maybe you will fall in love with goat cheese, as did I. This has been The Food Chain. Thank you all for tuning in. See you next week for more What's Eating What. Thank you, Margie.
Thank you.
All right.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.